into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, Suns fans! Welcome back to the
Sons of Anarchy after... Oh, there we are. Welcome back to
the mixer sticky.
Okay, welcome back to the Sons of Anarchy after show here on AfterBuzz TV, talking about season 7, episode 4, Poor Little Lambs. I'm Matt Lieberman. Joining me, Mr. Stephen Lemieux is here.
What up?
Mr. Kevin Undergaro is here.
Hello, Matthew.
Yes, thank you, Kevin, for holding it down for us last week. I know you were light of a full table, light of a full charter, but I know you did an amazing job with Mr. Mike August, who we'll thank again for filling in. This episode, I really, really enjoyed, and I really appreciate that Lynn isn't still in the dark. That we are seeing the actual effects of what war does. What war has come to Charming. There's no turning back. The fact is, even if Jax was to get the proper information to find out that Gemma had killed Tara, it's already too late. All of his machinations are starting to come back to bite him.
Well, Jax has been. He hasn't really been in a full-fledged war before.
No.
He's played some things he's done against one person or against another person. But he hasn't really been against everyone on all sides. So he's playing this game like he's, oh, I'm winning. When meanwhile, he's not really thinking of the consequences as if, what if this happened or what if this happened?
Anyone who would have been his ally, he has played against someone else and honestly is probably, you know, just played in general. Yeah. Like, he's running out of allies, even within his own club. You've got Jury, who he's so thoroughly betrayed. And, I mean, without getting too far ahead of ourselves, I mean, could be responsible for this latest bloodbath. Yeah, what do you think, Kev?
I mean, I agree. And to, we were saying off air, I was talking about Clay, you know, and
as you do.
I don't want to upset everyone, but the only reason is I love him as an actor, and the significance of our conversation this week was off air was that, you know, it would be interesting to see Clay with all this because it's so far beyond Clay. It's so much more complex. Mm-hmm. It's so much more threatening. So that he'd be like a Neanderthal. Like, he was so old school. It just, in our conversation, we were discussing this, and yeah. Jax, who's more equipped to deal with it, but even Jax, this is just...
Well, I mean, it's...
We're going to Apocalypse now.
Yeah, well, it goes into what Nero was saying to Gemma. You know, there comes a point where it's no longer about revenge, and it just starts to feel good. And I feel like he's so off the reservation emotionally about the violence and the disruption that he's causing that he's not thinking clearly. He's not planning strategically. He thinks that he's ahead of the game, but this Jury angle, this one thread that's been left dangling.
So we think.
And
not to mention so many other threads. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, he killed Pope, and
exactly.
Marx doesn't know that yet. Marx already has enough stuff to want to wipe them out. And when he finds out about Pope, and I think that you can't leave that as a writer, you probably mm-hmm. can't leave that undone.
And now after this cop killing, it's possible he might not even have White by his side. So who does he have left?
Kevin, just a general note about tonight's episode,
yeah.
which I found so interesting. Did you guys notice how many light moments we had?
Mm-hmm.
Several light moments from the big, really funny opening with Marilyn Manson. Why are we talking in code then?
Yeah. Because I miss my dog.
I miss my dog. Yeah. I mean, hilarious, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the stuff with Venus and you know,
Tig,
very funny. Mm-hmm. Even the digging scene.
Yeah, with Rat Boy.
Yeah. Get the phone. Yeah, it probably makes you hard. What? I said, it's hard.
It's really hard. It's going to be really hard.
So, in a lot of light moments that were really just funny. And as I was watching, I was like, oh my God, this is the darkest. Up to now, the darkest hour of the Suns we've experienced in seven seasons. And then we're having all these light moments, which are amazing. But then to get super serious at the end. It's just, yeah. I just thought, I loved it. I loved the balance and the writing. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of that?
Well, personally, I thought that it was Kurt Sutter. If you're looking at, you know, a season from a macro level, he stepped back and he's like, wait a second. We've had three really intense, hard hours in a row after the end of last season, which was three really intense, hard hours in a row. I'm about to take us even further into hell. We need to have some levity so that people don't just get exhausted. Right. Like, you know, it's why in a horror film you have a great horror film will have moments of levity or surprise, moments for us to release tension and laugh. Like, why do we laugh in the first place? It's a reaction that we have to a release of tension. We think something's going to be one thing, but instead it's something ridiculous. Oh, and we get to laugh, and it gets to make us a little more comfortable so that we can handle what's to come.
Do you think in the next 9 episodes, or however many there are, do you think that we have room for any more light moments?
I feel like we have room for moments. I doubt we're going to get a light hour before the end of this series, but if Kurt Sutter is a smart showrunner, and we know that he is, he's going to continue to pepper in these moments when he can, because otherwise you're facing audience fatigue.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I kind of like, I agree with you in that I like the kind of balance of where it was, because for this whole season so far, it's been, we've really lost sight of who the characters used to be. I mean, we lost sight of who, like, Bobby. Like, we haven't even really seen the true side of Bobby, really, this season.
Juice. For crying out loud. Yeah. Can't keep anything together.
So at least we're seeing some levity in that we can be like, okay, we care. These are all characters again. We can care about them in this moment.
Well,
we,
when you say... I don't,
well, not care about them, but...
Well, no. Back to the true side. We are seeing the true side of Bobby. Maybe not wording it the right way. I mean, Bobby right now is the elder statesman, mm-hmm. who is trying to hold this together in the best way he can. I don't know where he'd be lighter. We know that Tiggy is... He's off his rocker. We know that. We know Rat Boy's a kid, mm-hmm. you know. So I think maybe what you're saying is we're not really allowed to see any more of Bobby. We're not seeing any other elements of Bobby other than being all business, but that to me is in line with his character because of, again, elder statesman. Yeah. And he's always been the one who's got the most sound judgment.
He's never really been the source of big laughs in the first place.
Well, going back to Elvis, right? His impersonating Elvis. Right. I mean, he had those moments, but I just think that he's all... there's no room for that, mm-hmm. for his character. There's no room. He's got to...
He's going to be the one who's carrying all these concerns on his shoulders, right. because he's the elder statesman.
And he's more sensitive than, let's say, where Chibs, mm-hmm. you know, can be of sound mind and very serious, but we also know he's a mean ass kicker. He's old school. You know, his way with the club is, you know, you step out of line, you're going to get beat. I don't think Bobby's like that.
Yeah, but what do you think, Stephen?
I mean, I don't disagree with that. I just mean, usually Bobby is the voice of reason here, and we're going through...
Well, he was, wasn't he?
And he stood
next to Jackson. He's like, listen, you know.
No, yeah.
At any time, if you want to slow down, we're with you, brother.
That's his moment of bringing back his old self. I mean, I'm enjoying it. I'm just saying that... Let me find the right words before I just piss you guys off.
No, you didn't piss us off.
No.
I bet you. I was actually just doing that for your sake, for all the fans go crazy, yeah. going, what do you mean? You
know, we have the characters. You need that moment where everything's kind of normal again for a second, because without that, then everything's just 100 miles an hour. And at the end of this, I hope this brings Jack's back down to himself a little bit, mm-hmm. before they go dive deep into this war, because now he actually has...
Well, that's a better point of discussion.
Yeah. And we'll get into that in a moment, right. but first, I just want to throw to a quick message from our friends at the Dish Network.
Wherever you live in this great country of ours, Dish can bring you great TV. From the big city to the farmlands, high on a mountain or low in the valley. Dish delivers all the great movies, shows, and sports you can handle. Monthly packages start at just $19.99 a month for 12 months. This is your day, America. Get Dish and get thousands of TV shows and movies on demand and free installation in up to 6 rooms. Visit dish.com/afterbuzz. That's dish.com/afterbuzz. Limited time offer, 24-month commitment and credit qualification required. Cancellation fee and other restrictions apply. Requires a clear view of the southern sky. Call for details.
Did he just say we can get Dish for just $19.99 a month?
Yes, he did, dear.
And what do we pay for TV now?
A whole lot more than that, dear.
And why do we do that?
I don't know.
Get Dish. Go to dish.com/afterbuzz. That's dish.com/afterbuzz.
All right. So before we went on that break, we were talking about, you know, is there going to be a moment when Jax either, you know, goes further or where he takes a step back? And last season, we had that moment. It was a very firm moment about halfway through the season that I have to imagine is going to happen here, too, where he pulls back on the throttle and he's like, wait a second. I have not been doing my job. My vision has been clouded. Now, obviously, there's a lot of concern, you know, when I say something like that, that this season might be a retread emotionally of last season. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that this whole first part of the season has been about putting the club in a situation so precarious that it will define whether or not they will continue to exist, and having Jax have to battle through his poor choices to determine the future of this club. Will it exist or will it die? Will he be the one who let it die? Will he be the one who betrays everything that it ever stood for? I feel like that's the moment that we're building towards, and potentially, you know...
And will he intentionally burn it to the ground at some point?
That's also entirely possible. And, you know, Kevin, you were saying, you know, while we were off the air for a moment there, you know, will the death of Colette and all these other women, you know, that he's responsible for, and Colette, who he cared about, at least a little bit, you know, will that spur him further or will that cause him to dial it back? I'm really bummed that Colette only came back just to be killed. I feel like that's a waste of a character, and it was basically, it's biding time. It's saying, we need a death here, but I'm not willing to expend anyone of importance. Like, we lost Colette and we lost West this week. West, who has never had enough of a character of his own, who's always been like a really cool, laid back yet intimidating presence, and it's a bummer that he's gone. But do either of these deaths hold any weight for you?
I think Colette does, because it's a slight tie to Tara. That was a way to tie, you know, yet another love interest or someone he liked a lot, and so that's going to bother him. I think ultimately, I'll answer my own question. I think ultimately, it's going to be the reveal of Gemma being the murderer of Tara that's going to cause him to alter his path and the current path he's on. Does that mean he becomes? He saves the club. He destroys the club. I don't know, but I think it will. That will change the path. And I want to shout out to one of our YouTube commenters, one of our fans, who had predicted that Gemma will receive her comeuppance halfway through the series, probably around episode 6 or 7, or at some point, and then give Jax enough time for redemption or some other thing. I'm not saying I agree with that. I just want to give her credit because that's an interesting way.
Yeah.
Of storytelling.
That's honestly, that's the beautiful thing about this season, since there isn't going to be any more, is that, you know, Kurt Sutter doesn't have to obey any form of convention in how he wants to unfold the events of this season. There's so much potential story here. There's no firm way to end this series that, you're right. It could come down at any time, because he may want 6 episodes to fully expound upon what he's going to do with the club and maybe even go further into the future. I mean, Steven, how do you feel about this?
I mean, I agree with the comment you were talking about on YouTube. I mean, I said something similar to that the very first episode of the season, where I really think that you have to have that moment early on or midway through the season for the story to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because I don't want, this is episode 4, I don't want 8 episodes from now us still being like, oh, what's going to happen with Gemma and Jax? Like, I don't want that to be the finale. I'd rather it be like, what's going to happen with Jax and his life?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm more interested in. I'm like, where has the story been leading the entire for 7 seasons? Quick question, guys. Were we to assume that they thought that Gemma was still at Diose Norte?
Dios Norte. Well, here's the thing. I would say that if not for the fact that Montez was back with the club at Scoops after the grenade was thrown.
Yeah, so I wasn't too sure if that was like supposed to be a suspense moment or not.
In any case, let's come into this episode. We've been talking about in broad strokes. Obviously, we have this opening scene with Marilyn Manson's return as Tully. And I have to compliment the guy at how effective and how just... natural he feels in this role.
He doesn't overplay it.
He doesn't overplay it. He's funny. He's charismatic. He's dangerous. I love this scene. And we have Jax trying to offload the two remaining kilos of heroin from the Asian the Triad Guns for Drugs deal that they busted up a couple episodes ago. They set up a meet with these guys. They're going to meet them later in the episode, but they've got an issue with Black. Tyler shows up at Red Woody while Lila's in post on one of her latest porn epics, and it turns out that the person that August Marks needs to sign off on this land deal that has just disappeared is the pastor that they killed back in the first episode of the season, which, you know, we called it back then, was definitely going to come back, and it's like, oh crap, we got to take care of this. So they go and they dig up the body. It turns out that his wife also has power of attorney. So for a second, I don't know if you guys thought. For a second, I thought that his wife was the woman in the room that they shot.
Yeah, for a second, and then I
thought so too.
Oh wait, she's okay.
Yeah, maybe not. And so they dig up his body out in Sugar Woods, and we get this great moment with Rat Boy and Tiggy. We pull out the phones; they're all wet. They go to charge them and discover on one of them that is just video. That he was one of Venus's customers. And it's always a pleasure to see Venus again. I mean, we talk at times about Kurt Sutter's tendency to self-indulge. And Venus is one of those characters that feels like a self-indulgence is a divisive force on the show among fans. But personally, I always enjoy seeing her return. I love seeing Walton Goggins do anything, and I feel like this character is a very unique creation. And of course, we love seeing her and Tiggy together.
I also think with this show, you just have to be all in.
Yeah.
I think you have to be all in. He does so many curveballs as a writer. Just the fact that we have so many deaths just pile up week after week and no one ever really gets caught for them. I mean, you know, you just have to be all in. So when I see Venus, I'm like, oh, what's next? I don't take it for, I know some people are like, oh, it's a stunt, you know, put that character in there and self-indulgent. I just think that's the ride of SOA.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, I honestly like the show when it embraces its own weirdness, like the fact that all these bodies pile up and no one ever answers for them. No, this is just its own hyper, you know, like it's like the real world on steroids and Red Bull all mixed up in one.
Male soap opera.
Yeah,
it's like you're tweeting out like, half of my family's dead. Don't know who did it. # charming.
Yeah.
And just the bodies disappeared. It's fine.
Pretty much. Yeah. I don't really want to see the show because it would ultimately be very boring and sad, but just sort of like all the families of all the people who have died on this show and
what
they're up to.
You don't want
to
go there, man.
Yeah, we don't want to
talk about
Sarah
McLachlan singing in the background.
Yeah. So they go and visit Venus, and we've got this like lovely odd chemistry with Tig and Venus, who she calls him Alex. They've developed a friendship over these two seasons.
Just tell him, babe.
Yeah. So funny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness.
And Jax has repeated like, "Do I have to worry about this? I think I got to worry about this."
Yeah.
And you know, he goes up with her to expedite things, and we're just like, "What is going on up there?"
How weird is it going to be if this show ends? Mm-hmm. And that Tiggy finds the love of his life.
I think that would be
with Venus.
Spectacular.
I think so too.
Closing the final closing montage of the series includes Tig's wedding to Venus.
Yeah.
When Venus was talking to him on the couch in there though, I swear that I thought they were already like Vegas hitched.
Right.
Because she's like, "I made a vow." And I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I feel like they share that kiss without jumping too far ahead, and I feel like it felt like their first kiss. It felt like this is something where, like, Venus knew that
they were friends and it was flirty. And
but,
then,
you know, I feel like Venus knew that Tig was attracted to her but was still resisting because of her past. And finally, after drinking a whole bottle of booze, after being gut shot with a shotgun, he finally relents and goes for what he wants. And it's awesome. I'm glad.
Yeah.
So before that, Venus directs him to a lake house, and, you know, some nice upstanding white boys have to go to the door, because that's who everybody in that town wants walking around. And
so naturally they bring a van and three motorcycles and all wear their patches.
Exactly. And break into the house after waiting for like a second after knocking on the door.
I was just like, okay.
Mm-hmm. And again, shotgun through the door. Tiggy just gets shot right in the gut. Thankfully, as always, well, not always on this show, but as usual with, say, Tiggy, no vital organs were hit.
Well, it was listen, to be fair, it was buckshot.
Yeah.
With shotguns, you can either have, you know, a shell full of buckshot, which is just little BBs. And by the way, you know, they even tell you for home intruders, if you're not a killer and you don't want to really hurt anybody, you want to just scare somebody, buckshot's great. Just, you know, spray some buckshot, you know, you shoot that and you know, more than likely the perpetrator will live, but mm-hmm. they'll also get the message.
Got it.
So it's very realistic. It's not, you know, it's not out of the norm.
Okay. That's a detail that I wouldn't have thought about. But the stepson of the pastor and his mom are trying to get away, and Rat Boy sees them barreling away.
Rat Boy to the rescue Rat again. Mm-hmm. How many times has he's come
really
off the bench?
He's really picking up the slack, man. Yeah. I was always bummed out. I was bummed when Half Sack went, and basically every time a prospect has gone.
Half Sack.
And to have Rat Boy, you know, not only just survive and come up through the ranks, but continue to be such a star player.
Phil, think of all the bodies.
Yeah.
Of the sons.
Such a shame.
Yep.
But the car goes in the water. Jax goes in after the car. He and Chibs pull out the mom. And, you know, she's got track marks. She's doing heroin. Turns out that this pastor got in deep with Damon Pope, you know, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just caused all untold devastation to their family. And that he is just, he's juking this land deal so that he can get federal money to launder his dirty money, and that these homes will never get built. And Jax basically says, look, you're going to have to see this through, because otherwise right. you're going to get killed.
You're all dead. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sending someone to come and get you, and you're not going to get harmed. And they head out to this Aryan Nation deal.
Can I just say something on that whole scene and what they explain there? It's such a difference between the way the MC does things and the way the Niners, or who controls the Niners, do things than the IRA. Because you have the IRA, they're national gun smuggling ring. They're very well established. They're very professional in the way they do things.
They're soldiers.
Yeah, you got the MC, which you have Jax just running all over the place right now, just causing mayhem.
Family with a dysfunctional dad right now.
And then you get a cross section right now when you're talking about this church deal with the land deal mm-hmm. with Damon Pope. From years ago, they've been setting up something that is just currently taking effect to allow August Marks to launder money.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting to that is, like, August Marks, it shows how much of a planner he is and how far in advance he's planned for that. I can't even imagine how far in advance he's planned for anything to do with Jax Teller at this point.
Well, I mean, he said it last episode. He said, you know, it was Damon Pope who was, you know, his reputation. He came up by being the smartest person on the streets. I came up by being the most deadly person on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, versus Damon, who treated it more like a business and ran his crew like a business, August Marks runs it like Al Capone. He runs it like a despot. You know, you look like a businessman on the outside to keep the heat off you, but ultimately when it comes down to it, you're going to go to war and you're going to leave a trail of bodies. So it's interesting, though, your point, when you look at how these different organizations are run. The way that Jax is running the Suns is the most unwieldy. There is a strategy, but there isn't. Because that strategy is purely about revenge and not in any way about survival or furthering the club.
Well, you even look at the Asians. You got Yakuza involved and things like that.
The Triad.
The Triad, sorry. And, I mean, that's an organization that's been around for a really long time. It has its checks and balances, so they know how to run an organization. So you have all these three huge players at play, and Jax is fucking with all of them, pardon my language. He's messing with all of them with a crew that is maybe 10 strong in the area and has no real, like, foundation for how to handle these kind of situations.
Yeah.
It's he's like a wild card. Going
back to some of our fans who corrected me from the first episode of how I reacted, we have to base this off his perception. He's lost the love of his life in a senseless and violent way, and now he's just completely reacting to that.
Oh no, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I don't like how they're doing it. I'm just saying.
I'm not saying whether you like it or not. I'm saying just that under his pathos, it makes sense.
No, it does.
Based on his perception.
It does. I just am just wondering how the hell they're not going to all just be wiped off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I don't know. And we have to hope. I mean, I don't think any of us want to see that, right?
Right. But what you're bringing up, Kevin, is actually a very, very interesting point, especially at this stage in the season before things are about to really get heated in this gang war, is that not only is it a revenge play, you have to think about it from somebody who this was a hit that was retaliation for a smaller thing that had happened between us. You know, Lynn and the Asian said that everything was fine, and then they carried out a hit that they thought none of us would find out about. So, in essence, he's saying they started the war. This isn't just revenge. They wanted a war. They started it. So he is reacting to what he considers to be an enemy that is already planning a war, that is already planning attacks, that has a larger strategy.
And one more wrinkle to it.
Yeah.
So you're right, he's planning it, but he's also lost the love of his life, someone who is pure and good.
Absolutely.
And so now his logic is just gone, because if it was just Lynn, what I would do is I would befriend Marx, I would befriend everybody and just totally destroy the Chinese.
Demolish.
But the fact that his mind is gone, the fact that he now believes there's no sense to any of it. This was so senseless what happened to Tara that I don't know what. And he said in early episodes, I don't even know what my deal is now. I really don't. It's over. It's just all about the club now. And that's it. Hot knife. We're going to be a hot knife through butter.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, he thought that they were going to be the scrappy underdog that pitted everybody else against each other. But this jury thread, which we'll get into, I think, is what has ultimately undone this whole plan. We have this deal out in the woods with the Aryan Nation, and Althea Jerry, unbeknownst to them, has put out the word to her deputies, find Chibs and bring him here. We need to have a discussion.
It's personal.
And we'll get into Althea Jerry, who, I'm still trying to figure out what her plan, what her game is. Because last week, she came out as dirty, essentially, and she expressed this, this intimation towards Chibs. But at the same time, I was like, is she trying to lure them into some kind of trap? Like, I was like waiting for a reveal that never came.
I was saying that in the show last week, too. I was trying to get that out of Mike, what he thought.
Right.
There's some great bigger plan to what she's doing.
Exactly. And that still may be. It appears right now that she's trying to fill more of an Unser role where.
Remember we talked about this on commercial break. I said, I think she's the new Unser, meaning she's not afraid to bend the law a little bit, make a few bucks. End of the day, though, we don't want a bunch of kids being killed in an ice cream store, Dewey Jackson. And I don't want to see fellow policemen gunned down.
Exactly.
She'll play the game, but she's not about to.
But she's not psychotic and ruthless and a murderer.
She's not a Donald Logue.
It's not her end goal, right?
Exactly. What was his character's name?
Don't ask me that right now.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Set him up for failure.
Yeah, sorry, seriously.
Okay, there's about 5 hate emails coming your way now.
Right? So, they're out in the woods, and Eggly and Kane just happen to see them ride past as they come out of a coffee shop. And isn't it true of great television and great movies? You know, coincidence should only happen when it's something that's going to really screw things up. And this coincidence, horrible, because these cops get spotted by the Aryan Nation, and Eggly is just wiped out. Kane is barely holding on. She's got 4 shots to the back, and the deal is obviously off. And it's a big problem because, Jax, they have to assume the worst, that if they called it in, they could all be getting hauled in.
Forget it.
Yeah, it's over.
Why didn't she call it in, though? That's my question. Is she could have grabbed the radio right then. Instead, she gets out of the car and starts running, which seems like the less safe place.
No one said she's a great cop.
Right.
That's your response.
That's, I mean, it's the truth. I mean, you're confronted with guns, right? You do your job. It's fight or flight.
Many guns.
Fight or flight.
You've got a pistol.
Yeah. If I've got a shot at surviving, I might take that over calling it in and definitely getting shot. Also, you just witnessed the shock of your longtime partner getting blown away.
Right. So if they shot, if they shot him, then the more time you spend to call something, and they're going to shoot you. No one's going to come save you if they already went to the. They're not afraid to shoot a cop, so your thing is just to run, I guess.
Exactly.
I feel like she'd get away in the vehicle more easily.
Well, she wasn't the driver. She had a body in her way, right?
Mm-hmm. I guess that's true.
Yeah. So Jerry comes down to Scoops, and she's like, "What's up? What's going on? Were you a part of this?" And they're like, no.
Clearly, and shaken up.
Yeah, shaken up. Very shaken up. And
charming's not so charming.
Exactly. Right. And she's like, you know, were you a part of this? And they all firmly deny it. No. And she's like, what about Mr. Haas? You know, she had come by to interrogate Nero at Diosa, which we'll get into in a bit. And Jax just comes out and admits it. Because if you lie about everything, then she's just going to keep pushing.
Right.
Give her the thing that doesn't matter.
That's it.
Yeah, give her the thing that doesn't matter, she'll back off. And that's exactly what happened.
Right.
Until a bald Asian man throws a grenade in their window, and, Chibs, you know, tackles her to the ground, protects her, whole place blows up. Thankfully, no one dies. But obviously, it's a hit from the Asians. Her suspicions about the Asians, which, Chibs had been trying to steer her away from, that seems like pretty definitive proof to me that there's a war going on.
Yep.
When grenades are involved, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only time that I think grenades are used is in a war.
I mean, it's a very big symbol for war, yeah.
Yes. Front lines, you throw them.
Do they need to bring a tank into the freaking ice cream shop?
Maybe not. Pardon me. The fact is, she's got to know about this thing now, and the club is, you know, shaken up, but then ultimately they get this call from Diosa. Nero gets a call. He shows up. He gets a call from Diosa that's basically like, hey, man, you know, thank you for bringing us all together, but, you know, this thing that's about to go down has nothing to do with you. It's about the Suns. And he's like, what's about to go down? Diosa. They all run over there, and it's already too late. We're going to get into all of that, as well as Juice and Gemma and all that great stuff.
After we talked about iTunes.
That's true, Steven. You stole it away. You know, it's the one thing I have in this world. It's precious to me. Why is it precious? I'll tell you. Because every single week I tell you to go to iTunes, rate and review this show, and every show that you listen to or that you watch on YouTube, because it is the best way for you to support us here at AfterBuzz TV. You know, I don't know if you're aware, but we put out between 70 and 80 hours of free content a week. It's a crazy, huge endeavor to get it all to you for free, to give you the highest quality after show podcast content that we possibly can for the widest array of shows available on any network. And I think that that's something to be commended.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So, you know, we're not asking for your money. We're just asking for a little bit of your time. Go to iTunes, rate and review the shows. It only takes a quick second. You give your feedback directly to us so we can give you the best possible Sons of Anarchy podcast that we possibly can. And it helps us get our sponsors. It helps us get guests. It really helps everyone here do their jobs better. So support the show because we support you for free. And you get a great shout out.
All right. So did you guys do shout outs last week, Kev?
No, I didn't.
All right. Well, we're going to do 2 weeks worth real
quick.
There
we go.
Best Sons podcast out there. 5 stars. Den Lake.
Thank you, Den Lake.
Excellent podcast by JKS-SJA. Love this podcast. Very insightful. Great points of view. Very engaging. Love the informed opinions on this podcast. Best AfterBuzz podcast by Taylor Lauren W. I just have to write this review in all seriousness. I love AfterBuzz and all of the podcasts. But there's just something about this one.
Thank you very much. We try to hold it down.
And this is the one that I tweeted to you. Great complaint to the show.
Oh, yeah.
Just a great podcast, and it gives you something more with the predictions to think of while watching the next episode.
I think they meant a great compliment to the show.
Yes, I believe that is the intended word.
Well, I'll take those complaints anyway.
Yeah.
Those are the best complaints. Ryan is Wickless. This was from 2 days ago. This podcast is my favorite way to go over the show with other opinions. It's for the true SOA geek. One of the guys keeps calling Tig Tigs, but I'll forget.
That's me.
And then we got another one from AKP528. The show has been really good so far. I have listened to it for all the seasons. Just don't use the F-bomb as many times.
Okay.
Yeah, who's been using the F-bomb?
I don't know. Steven was the one who used it today.
I did myself today.
Steven.
We'll work on it. Thank you for the feedback. No, it's good feedback.
They
it's good feedback.
It after your episode, Kev. Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
I didn't use the F-bomb.
All right.
Mike August. Looking at you.
No.
All right. So, over at Diosa, Gemma is setting up what I thought was an office, but I guess is like a new massage room. Nero's moved all of his stuff out, I guess because he's moving into the office in Stockton. And she's setting it up, and Colette has come in to take over while Lila is handling all the stuff over at Red Woody, because everyone there is incompetent. We've got the fun running gag of this hooker who just does not know math.
Not a hooker.
Math. Escort.
There you go.
Fine.
Don't be disrespectful.
I apologize. Escort and massage specialist.
Respect the dead, Matt.
Okay. I'll respect the dead. We get this scene between Gemma and Jax where she calls Colette his mommy fetish, which she's not wrong. Although it's like a little wrong to bring that up to your son.
And yeah, as Jax pointed out.
Yeah, please never say that again, mother.
We just got a tweet from Southern Siren saying Nero was meeting with the Chinese when Tara was killed.
Interesting. So you think that he holds Nero potentially responsible?
No, I think he knows.
Nero knows that the Chinese didn't do it.
We saw, you know what? That makes sense because when we see predictions, there's little clues.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, man.
So you think that, because I've been wondering about that because I'm like, if Juice gets clipped, if Juice gets killed before he passes on this information, how on earth would Jax ever know
the truth? Okay, again, thank you to our fans.
Yeah.
Another device is the fact that she's talking out loud to Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Abel could hear, or somebody could overhear her talking, these conversations she's having with Tara.
Brooke.
Anybody.
Mm-hmm. And they already hinted at that when they heard Juice talking. And they're like, who are you talking to, Juice?
Right, so it's another device.
Mm-hmm.
It could work.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Gemma and Juice are not coping well. And we get to see really Juice break down this episode. And like a really stellar performance as he's talking about, you know, how being alone cripples him, especially in his current state of
mind. Great monologue.
Really, really well written and well performed. No matter where he goes, it's not a life for him. It's basically a ticking clock until, you know, he ends it. I was so upset that I wasn't here last week to discuss when Chibs told him to put a gun in his mouth, considering that Chibs was the one who not only found him trying to commit suicide, but then beat the hell out of him for it, and is now telling him to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we mentioned that.
Yeah.
We weren't here.
Well, yeah, we weren't here, but it's definitely weighing on his mind.
I want to just, even that though, it's just, you look at Juice's character and, like, poor guy.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing that kind of set him off in the first place was this secret that he was keeping. Mm-hmm. Like, his secret of being blackmailed for being his father being black. Like, he's not good at keeping secrets, guys, because he thinks about them too much. And we know this for four seasons now. And now he's got this gigantic secret on him. And it just, the monologue just made so much sense for his character because all he is alone with his thoughts. And this is what made him break down to Clay. And that's what got him involved
and
with Clay.
I think great work by Sutter because Gemma, true to her character, it looks at that and says, okay, you are weakness. You are a liability.
Threat to me.
I tried, but no, now I have to kill you.
Now I have to kill you. And he knows that that's coming.
Which is interesting as well.
Yeah. And what I love about this and where they are positioning Juice is if he survives his confrontation with Gemma next week, he finally has that thing that he can do to help the club. The club is embroiled in a war because Jax thinks that the Asians killed Tara. Okay? So he can risk his life to tell the club what really happened so that this war can be averted.
We can force Gemma to tell them.
Yeah, so that we can avoid further bloodshed.
Damn.
I'd love to see it.
God, what if he had Gemma at gunpoint and said, you get one phone call before I kill you?
I don't think that's juicy, though. I don't know that he would
do that. If he's, like, forcing her to tell... Like, that's his way of forcing her to tell Jax what happened.
But if she... But that's the thing, is, like, if she tells Jax under duress, he's not going to believe it.
I mean, It just, every week we get by and that Juicy doesn't get killed.
Yeah.
Like, he's so on borrowed time, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, how great would it be if we could carry it out the whole season?
That would be cool.
I mean,
yeah, I'd love to see him somehow survive, but I feel like he's the tragic lamb of this show.
He's been tragic, yeah, forever. I don't want to forget that I had written this down, and then Mike August had sent me the email about it as well. But Gemma saying, schools are different now. Grandma Gemma, of course, you know, up for Mother of the Year, dropping the dropping Abel off. And, you know, school's different now, she said. Kids got to keep up. Of course, she's referencing, you know, going to better schools. You know, Jackson Thomas didn't have to.
Yeah.
She says Thomas will go to be a doctor like his mom. And then she pauses and said, you know, Abel knows his tribe.
Yeah.
It just is a lot of meaning behind school's different now, and, you know, kids got to keep up. I mean, the gang culture has changed, the club climate has changed, but Abel knows his tribe. It's just very interesting because this kid is witnessing a lot. They keep going to him. Thomas, we don't really see or deal with much. Feels like he's going to be some kind of linchpin.
Yeah, well, he very much is. The show hinges on Abel because we come into the series as he's being born with a birth defect. Like, this entire series is ultimately about what will Abel be left with and how will he grow up. And I think it's so perverse that she takes his, honestly, emotional and mental scarring as, you know, self-ownership of the club and that he will one day, you know, be like his father and his grandfather. Because honestly, I don't think that it's that he knows his tribe. It's that he's seen and heard and been a part of so much that it's hard for him to, like, be normal. It's hard for him to socialize.
We can't take her word at face value that she says he knows.
She's reading into
it. Yeah, that's just what she wants.
Yeah.
But we know the kid is clearly affected by this, what he has seen. It'd be interesting to see if he's the one, either he perishes and that sets something else into action, or if he's somehow sees something, admits something. I don't know.
Abel kills Gemma. Throwing it out there, playing with the gun.
Anyway, I didn't want to take us off subject, but I know that was an important line.
It was very important. And it's, you know,
he's certainly able.
Stop. but my point is, in terms of her talking to Tara, we're seeing how Gemma not only is unraveling, but continues to justify her actions to herself.
She's so manipulative of even her own psyche.
Yeah, last week when she said, you know, like, I think this is honestly, this is how it was always supposed to be.
Do you know why it's good writing? Because in reality, people who have done those kind of actions have to do that to live with themselves. So they have to create this
narrative.
Yes, anything they can do to make that narrative real, anything. By the way, anyone who gets in the way of that has to be killed, too, either symbolically or physically. This is how she's living with the fact that she killed an innocent doctor and the love of her son's life and the mother of her grandchildren.
Yeah. Juice, now there's an APB out for him. Every cop in the Pacific Northwest is going to be looking for him. So Gemma says, you know, tear it. You're coming with me. We're going to my dad's cabin. She puts together a gun and a silencer. He does the same because he knows that a reckoning is coming.
Interesting silencers, too.
Mm-hmm.
So where's it going to take place? You know what I mean? We don't often see silencers, but...
Well, I mean, Gemma put hers in a hat box, so I imagine that she was going to wait until they got
She took it out of the hat box.
Yes.
Anyway, just the fact that we have silencers means,
they're going to be trying to sneak up on each other and do it in public.
Right, and we're not going up to the woods to the father's house to do it. Just interesting. They both had silencers.
Definitely. So let's talk about where this attack came from. West is now dead. The guns that they stole from the Chinese are also gone. I have to imagine the only person that I could see giving them up or having the information and the grudge to do it would be Jury. But like,
don't you think?
But at the same time, would he turn on his fellow club members?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not his charter, but he'd give up the charm.
By the way, the club. That's right. They went up and they killed. It wasn't Jax who killed those two. It was all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby was there. Jibs was there. Tig was there. Everyone was there.
Yeah.
And just the way, the subtext of what he said to Bobby,
mm-hmm.
On the phone was like, oh, no, he's...
Oh, yeah, no, he served with one of these guys who died, served with him, overseas, maybe in Iraq, maybe in Afghanistan, and he has a huge grudge. We'll find out next episode whether or not it was him, whether or not it was somehow August or Tyler. I can't imagine that it would be.
I don't think smart enough.
Yeah, I honestly don't
August
see them
is
doing
smart
it.
Smart enough, but I don't. He's not coming into play yet.
Yeah,
he's gonna when he comes. It's gonna be
thunderous. Yes. We're gonna know. All right, so folks, let's go into predictions.
All right, I'm down.
Yeah.
Now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
All right, so we've already kind of gotten into it, but what do we think is going on next week? We've got this developing Chibs, Althea, Jerry relationship subplot. I don't know if that's going to go anywhere. Does she still have an agenda? Are we going to have it confirmed that it's Jerry next week? What do we think?
I think the club's on lockdown. I think they put the club on lockdown. I think they call Jury to tell him what's up, and Jury says, oh, yeah, I'll send some guys down for you and, like, give them the option of backup that they'll never get.
Or he'll ask them where they are and he'll send the Asians.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be guard your bases for the next two or three episodes before something happens that kind of opens their eyes. Not two or three episodes. Maybe next episode it's guard your braces. And then,
yeah. What do you think, Kev?
I mean, we saw Nero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seems like he was expressing something. Maybe he'll say the Chinese couldn't have killed them because I was with them.
Mm-hmm.
Gemma can't take Juice to the cabin because this is happening.
Jax is going to want her on lockdown to protect her.
Yeah, he's going to be like, get here now. Like, get to the house now.
Mm-hmm.
So then we're going to have Juice, who still has an APB at him, but they have bigger problems at the moment because of the two cops that were shot.
Mm-hmm.
Another stay.
Yeah.
For Juicy.
Oh, man.
I hope so.
I really hope we don't put this off forever. We need to have them come to a head, and I hope that it happens this week. All right, folks, thank you so much for joining us for this edition of the Sons of Anarchy After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. We will be back next week with an all-new episode. Stephen Lemieux, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Stephen Lemieux, STPHENLEMIEUX, and doing Sleepy Hollow tonight and the finale of The Strain this Sunday. Also, check out a recent interview I did with Roger Craig Smith, the voice actor for Sonic the Hedgehog, as well as Batman and Arkham Origins, and Captain America and Ultimate Alliance.
All right, fantastic. And very Kevin good. Undergaro.
At Undergaro, and I also do the AfterBuzz TV Boardwalk Empire, and we only have four episodes left.
Of the whole series.
So once I lose, I've lost Breaking Bad. I'm going to lose this. Then I'm going to lose Sons. I think I'm out of TV.
Oh man, I hope not. You're going to get some new ones. You got Better Call Saul coming up in the winter.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. Folks, you can find me at Matt Lieberman on Twitter. That's MattLieberman. You can find all my videos for SourceFed and SourceFed Nerd on YouTube. You can also visit my personal YouTube channel, youtube.com/MatthewDLieberman. Thank you so much. We will see you next week. Good night.
Thanks, Sean.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect
from
the views of AfterBuzz TV.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.